Guys, so much happens in episode 4, aptly titled Crash Into You, because crash. But I think the car crash.
I just got it.
No.
Me too. Don't feel bad.
Okay. Crash Into You is this an episode where Haley convinces Lucas to go with the team to a party at Nathan's beach house, hoping that the guys will become friendlier.
Good luck.
Which obviously is not going to happen.
I think the car crash of my heart is our finally being able to see Deb Scott, Barbara yes. Allen Woods.
She is such Woo. A babe. Ugh. Such a babe and such a good mom. Such Ugh. A good mom. Like really trying to, you know, she sees the problem with her son. She doesn't quite know how to fix it, but she sees it and she's not just like going along with every craziness that Dan is showing us.
Mm. Well, and how like Dan Scott has been situated firmly in this show. So to find a woman to go toe-to-toe with him, but also still, like, kiss him in the kitchen, you know? She is able to do that with such ease, you know? And she came into a cast that was already working together.
Yeah. That's right. And they did such a beautiful job of establishing. I forgot that there was intimacy between Dan and Deb. Mm-hmm. Like, the way they hug each other in the kitchen, and he goes, oh, is that my wife? And there's this whole dynamic, and Barb played so many levels in this episode so flawlessly to have that romance with him, to challenge him, to be observing her changing teenage son. Oh my God, when she calls him Surly.
Surly. Do you feel like our parents ever said that about us?
She's surly teenagers.
It was a tall order for the character of Deb, though, to be able to walk that line, to toe that line of understanding why this woman would have married and stayed with this man, and yet having her be sympathetic and watching her walk into Karen's cafe and handle that situation and just extend that olive branch in the sort of awkward way that, you know, she did and that grown-ups would. That's tough.
Yeah, I feel like I could see when she walked in and she's like, a coffee. Oh, and a biscotti. And then she goes to leave and you're like, oh no, she's losing it. She's chickening out. And then they suddenly have this beautiful conversation. I mean, really what we are is the Barbara Allen Woods fan club.
Big time. These are facts. She wears the pants in this episode, which, you know, watching it as an adult lady now, I'm like, yeah, girl. You just put those britches on.
As an adult, what hit me was their whole conversation when she talks about how Nathan is obviously suffering or struggling. Mm-hmm. And Dan tries to blame her and says it's because you're working and you're gone. And she says, I'm gone at max 10 days a month. And he's pressuring her. If you were home, if you spent more time with him. And she claims her identity, her career, that she deserves to have both, to be a mom, to have a job, to be working, to travel. Like, she really defends herself as an individual woman who's also a mother. And I didn't catch that in 2003.
No, I didn't either. But she did. She did such a badass job of that.
Well, and the only two people that see Nathan's vulnerabilities ever are Deb and Haley. I mean, the scenes going from scene to scene where he's so sweet with you, Joy. Oh, my God. You and him in the car are just.
Yeah.
Darling.
And then to see him become such a jackass in the next scene. But it just showed what we were saying when we were watching back was that it's only James could do this, because James intrinsically is just such a great person, such a good man, that he managed to play this character that was such a jerk and so confused because of what he's been taught by his parents, and yet still be vulnerable. And it was still kind of manipulative. He was using his vulnerability, even though he was being honest, to manipulate Haley, but it doesn't come off as sociopathic.
Yeah.
He just comes off as confused. Cause I think a lot of guys, I mean, think about the guys that are like on TV right now or whatever in those shows, like it would have been hard to cast someone.
Absolutely.
Like that.
Yeah. And I think if you'd cast someone who in real life was a dick or was a manipulator, there would have been no redemption for Nathan, and James bringing himself to that part and his kindness and his groundedness. It's like you could see through the Nathan Scott armor And yeah. And in a way, it let him play someone who was cruel better than I've seen most villains be villains.
Yeah. Yeah. You really felt, I felt bad for him.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Brooke thing from last episode. You know, it's like, here's all my bravado. I'm going to be real hard and I'm going to say things that are shocking. And then also, but inside, I just want somebody to hug me. These are kids that didn't get hugged enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And there's something about that. Oh, God. Like, talk about a cringe moment in this episode. You know, the game ends and then Nathan invites Lucas to this party, right? We think it's an olive branch and everybody's there. And you know, Haley and Lucas show up in the tow truck and, all you know, there's the pretend meet and we're like, oh, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? And then we start playing Never Have I Ever.
Did you guys actually play that in high school?
No, I don't think so. I had never really been to a house party, I think, once in my life. I had an interesting childhood. But
you were in Manhattan drinking champagne, Joy.
Yeah, you were like a working actor.
Not when I was 15 and 16. I was still like in high school, just normal neighborhood kid. And I hadn't been to, I remember shooting that scene and being like, oh, so this is what a house party feels
like.
Really?
Yeah. What was your like typical weekend in high school? Like, what'd that look like for each of you guys?
I just hung out with friends and I was usually involved in some kind of theater or something was going on with the arts. Yeah, ride my bike. I mean, my parents were, it was very 80s parenting. Like, go here, here's a stick, here's your bike, here, like,
get
go
out.
Outside and play.
Here's a stick. So what were you like, kids doing out in California? Were you guys going to like beach parties?
No. Oh my gosh, that's like so funny to me. I rarely ever went to the beach. Once my family was in Pasadena, it's just like traffic here is horrible. but similarly, Joy, you know, I was doing a lot of theater, and so I was always, you know, in a play, at a rehearsal, and my school was so small, and being an all-girls school, you know, we didn't bring boys from the all-boys schools in the neighborhood in, so we played all the parts. Yeah, the girls played everything. Our theater director.
My God, Sophia, that informs so much about who you are.
It does. Tell me more.
Did you play boy? Did you play any of the boy parts?
Oh yeah,
yeah. Girl.
I like slicked back my hair like Charlotte in that Sex and the City episode when she gets her portrait taken like a man.
That's so awesome.
Oh, I loved it. I loved it. And it was actually really interesting. We had this incredible theater director, this man named Tim Wright, who is unfortunately no longer with us, who honestly changed my life and taught me so much about storytelling. And, you know, he taught us about historical Shakespeare and how at the time it was thought to be scandalous to have a woman in the theater. So back then the men played women's parts.
Right.
And he was talking about this sort of, you know, honestly, reclamation of the theatrical space with all of us as women playing all these parts and doing all the tech and learning how to light. And I was the prop master on so many plays and it was so fun. And then my senior year, we kind of had a more typical experience. All of a sudden, I think because people finally had driver's licenses and, you know, we all finally could be mobile. And we started like one of my friends and I started dating these two best friends. I'd been in love with my, you know, childhood sweetheart from camp since I was 9. And then my senior year in high school, I started dating this boy. He looked exactly like Paul Walker. Good God.
And
him and his best friend went to an all boys school on the West Side. And so then it was like, oh, we're going to see our boyfriends at a West Side party tonight. And we felt, we were so innocent and silly, but we felt like grownups. Like the way I think we were saying we felt when we got to Wilmington and we look back and we're like, oh my God, we were babies, but like we thought we knew what we were doing. My senior year in high school, I was like, I am like officially a teenager. I didn't know anything, but I would go to these, we would have these house parties that the boys would throw and we felt so cool. And really we just stood around and like everyone was staring at each other trying to figure out who was going to talk first.
Yeah.
What do we do
house
now?
Party. What do we like, do now? How does this work?
Virginia was all house parties, you guys. Like football games, basketball games. Like, I don't know. Did we do it for soccer in the spring? Probably not. Track team. Oh, the track team was hot.
Wait, track team had parties?
Girl.
I don't know anything about this.
Any excuse, right?
Wow. Any excuse in Virginia to have a house party. It was happening. And so, like, yeah, a lot of house parties. I remember, like, my boyfriend in high school was a bad kid. And I remember being in a basement and someone was smuggling alcohol through the basement window. And
oh, like those little narrow windows at the top?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Me being the clean teen at the party and like head of the clean teens, I'm like, who is doing this? And it's my boyfriend. And he, we like went into the tree house in the backyard and had a very like Nathan Haley conversation where I was like, what are you doing? Are you just trying to be cool for these people? And he was like, babe, I'm only drinking orange juice. And now I know it was like totally spiked with vodka.
Totally.
But at the time I'm like, oh, well, I guess that's not so bad. But when we shot this stuff, I remember being all high on my horse, like, why are all the lights on? This is a dumb party. You know? Why are we walking around in broad daylight? This is crazy.
You knew. You knew. Well, you know what? And I have to say, the star of the episode was Peyton. Peyton was the star of this episode for
Hell
me.
Hell yeah.
Because in that same way of you, of knowing, of just like having the ability to see beyond what's going on directly around you. But mm-hmm. I don't know a lot of kids that were that introspective in high school and capable of asking questions like, mm-mm. are we going to turn out like Deb and Karen? I mean, what high schooler has the wherewithal to ask themselves that question? And I love that about Peyton. I think that's one of the major things that the audience connected with about her.
And the wherewithal as well in that breakup scene with Nathan to stand so firmly in yourself, and he's trying to, you know, do the like, oh, baby, I'm sorry business. And when you say, you basically call Nathan out for his behavior with Haley, and you say, whatever you're doing there is messed up. And if you aren't doing something there, it's messed up, essentially, because you're stringing her along. And for a girl in high school to look at her boyfriend and say, you're either flirting with that girl for real or you're flirting with her to manipulate her, and either way, you're a bad guy. That's not something, especially in that era that we were encouraged to do. It was like, who's flirting with my boyfriend? It wasn't, maybe he's a bad dude.
I wonder what made them strike that tone in this episode, because Deb is not threatened or weirded out by Karen, and Peyton's not threatened or weirded out by Haley. They were clearly trying to make a strong note about, like, you know, we're not in competition with one another.
I love that.
It's such a beautiful thing. And then I'm like, well, what happened? How did it go sideways? When did we start calling each other whores as like terms of endearment?
I don't know.
On the show, it's
a,
you know?
It's a weird deal. You know, the whole like vibrator thing made us all like,
so gross.
Ooh, barf.
Were you like that in high school though, Hillary? With that introspective and the ability to stand up and tell people what's what? And I mean, was that in you?
I was super confrontational. I think that the things that were more important to me in high school were like the movie Boys Don't Cry came out and Girl Interrupted came out, and I read The Bell Jar. And so it was like a firestorm of teenage girl mental health, also like gay straight alliance kind of stuff. All of that stuff was very important to me. And I knew that I was leaving for New York, so it didn't matter who I pissed off. And
nice.
And I feel like Peyton has her friendship with Brooke, but isn't really connected to anyone else. So might also carry a lot of that, like, we don't care who we piss off.
Yeah.
You know?
It's interesting because I realized that, and this is something I've been, you know, learning to expand for myself even as an adult. But when I think back, it's always been really easy for me on behalf of others to not care who I piss off, to defend people, to stand up for people, but not to do it for myself. And I think I really see some of that in Brooke. You know, we were all talking about this after the last episode. You know, I think Hillary, you said it. You said, I always got the sense that Brooke was actually a virgin. And I think so too. And I think that what resonated with me about her was a girl who only was taught to validate herself by other people's opinions and by charming other people and by being attractive to boys. And so she would make herself the butt of the joke. Like she bit on the vibrator joke, and then that's a horrible thing to say, bit on the vibrator. She took the bait. I'm so sorry. She took the bait on that
joke. I'm like, Sophia.
I have a coffee. I'll drink this. You know, she took the bait on that. And then I think like the sort of shame and the desire to be liked, then she leans into it and goes, okay, so, you know, my turn. Never have I ever. Oh, no, I did that. And to make everyone laugh.
Yeah.
And that moment of saying it and then looking around to see if people thought it was funny, like seeing myself make that choice for her then really broke my heart.
Such good casting, because it would have been easy to do that. You know, it just would have been easy to play it the other way.
Seductively.
And what, and you weren't seductively seductive. And one dimensional and just, you know, but you really had that. You knew what you were doing.
Thanks.
Yeah. Listen. That's what I want viewers to do in this rewatch, is to question every choice. Like, was Brooke Davis really fast and easy? Mm. You know, like what is the reality of these things? Because what we're saying is one thing, but how we're behaving, that's what we were able to control. Yeah. We couldn't control the dialogue, but we could control how we said it.
Mm-hmm. How.
Yeah.
You're right. That's where we could find our power. Like, we couldn't get away from some of the things that were written for us to do, but there were moments where we could be more ourselves, moments where we could subvert the obvious. And it, I will say, it means so much to all of us, with all you listening at home. Those have always been the moments that the fans have loved the most. And I love that we were able to, even in the midst of trying to figure out what the hell we were doing, like, find these moments.
I want to talk about Joy's hat.
Yes, please.
I was going to say that. Can we talk about Haley's hat?
Okay, will you tell people what the backstory of the hat is? Come on.
Okay, look, I have to preface this by saying that there is a possibility that I've created this scenario in my mind because I hated the hat so much. But
I don't think
what I remember, my recollection of this is that I was given this hat. I did not like this hat. I hated this hat. I was given this hat and told, you have to wear this hat. And I was told later that the person who chose the hat for me chose it because it looked like a penis hat, like the top of a penis.
It had mushrooms literally on it.
Yeah, and they thought it was funny to make Haley look like she was, like, had her head, had like a penis on her head.
I hated
the hat so much.
I hated that hat. Did they tell you this right away,
Joy? No, it was way later. It was way later, because it would always pop up and we'd see images of it. Because it's like, I don't know why this hat keeps showing up. I see photos of it for years. I've seen, like, it's the, because it's so terrible. I think probably it's like,
And also there's that beautiful scene with the two of you in the car. You know, we've talked about it from Nathan's side, but the vulnerability that Haley leans into, and the softness that you gave her, and the humor and the cracking jokes, but also the bashfulness. It was so innocent and beautiful.
Bashful is the perfect word.
Right? She's bashful. And it happens in that friggin' hat for a lot of it.
It all happens, you know, in that hat.
A lot of it happens in the hat. And then, you know, you finally take it off on the car ride. But I think that's part of it, because it's that's where the seed of Nathan and Haley was planted, was in that friggin' hat.
Yeah.
Just the top of it.
Because the second you take the hat off, it's like, it's like she's all that, you know, like, you're a beautiful girl. Mm-hmm. Your chin in that car scene, Joy, just your little, like, chin dimple
little
and
cleft.
Your little pout and your, like, your eyes, and you can tell that you're listening to him, like, you're really listening. It is so, like, Ariel from Little Mermaid.
And the, like, red hair.
They needed the hat to, like, dress you down, you know, so it's not so on the nose and like, well, duh, these two are going to end up together. All they could do is put a stupid hat on.
It's like when they put Rachel Lee Cook in glasses.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, I
agree. I think, I mean, it could have just been that, and then maybe the penis story came up later. I mean, who knows? I don't know.
But that also could have been them, like, editing history, where after they watch it in dailies, they're like, she looks like a dick. You know? Yeah.
It could have been. It could have been. But yeah,
when does the poncho pop up? I remember them giving you shit about the poncho.
Yeah, that was the other thing. The poncho. I think I chose the poncho. I think that was my choice. My bad choice. I made some very questionable wardrobe choices throughout the years, but I guess it always kind of worked for Haley.
Ma'am, I was wearing a buckle across my chest in this episode. So tell me about it.
You got to keep those things locked up, honey.
My God. Oh my why? God. Yeah. Well, like, I buckled myself into my shirt for what?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, 90s oof. Fashion left it, like, kept crawling, creeping into the 2000s.
Yeah. The tail end was really brutal.
Mm-hmm. I like that you and Sarah Edwards, who played Teresa, were kind of wearing the same thing. It was, you know, that, like, tells a story that all the cheerleaders have a uniform.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And then they put Peyton in a turtleneck. So, you know, how can we be the antithesis of this?
Yeah.
It also kind of put Brooke in the queen bee category that she was, and that, like, there was, it just subconsciously put a little, like, oh these girls want to be like her, you know?
That's so interesting. Yeah.
We had your cronies. Mm. Best crony of the episode goes to Tim. Oh, so.
Brett Claywell.
That
he really had that Joey Tribbiani thing going on.
Yes. Yeah. He is so good. And, like, we all thought he was so funny then, but as an adult to watch him, I'm like, man, his comic timing is just so on point. At the door, the entire physical nature of his comedy that ends with him weirdly just knocking on the house because he doesn't know what else to do is so brilliant. He takes my breath away.
But do you remember they always gave him the hardest job because we all had real lines. Like, we had lines on a piece of paper that we were supposed to recite. And they would wait till the end of the day and get all of our coverage. And then they would get Brett's coverage. And they'd give him two takes. And they'd be like, all right, Brett, just improvise. And
do something funny. Go.
And it's everyone's standing there watching you. Like, the sun is rising. You know, there's, like, a clock ticking. And Brett would just have to go.
Mm-hmm.
And he's so good at it. He just knew. He knew who Tim was.
Yeah, he really got to hone some skills on that. And by the way, skills. Like, the opening scene when we're at the basketball game and he's running. He does this, like, fake out dribble between his legs so seamlessly. I was like, oh my God, wait, Brett was, like, a really good basketball player. I forgot.
Yeah. I think they all were, like, legit basketball players, except for Chad, who was a football boy, right?
Yeah.
I guess so, yeah.
Did we talk about that in the last episode, this shot that he had to make in the court? I know we talked about it on our Zoom, but I don't know. I mean, yeah, that was tough for him because he was definitely a football guy and, you know, good at it from what I know, from what I heard. But it's just such a different, it's a completely different sport. It's a totally different skill set.
It'd be like if I had to do gymnastics. Like, I'm good at other stuff, guys.
Yeah.
But you know, everything we did involved a ton of extras, mm-hmm. like these big party scenes, the big basketball scenes. And we were all really young actors. So we were having to make decisions in front of a live audience on set. And then, like, hope that when it aired 2 weeks later, because our turnaround was so fast, that people liked it. Getting feedback that people didn't like Peyton was so bad.
You got feedback that people didn't like Peyton?
Well, because remember, we were supposed to be a mid-season replacement. So we were supposed to bank all of our episodes before we ever aired. And then there was a Rachel Lee Cook show that Warner Brothers decided, like, you know what? This isn't ready. We're not going to do this right now. Let's just put One Tree Hill on in September. And we'd only been filming since July.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd only banked like 3 episodes when our show started airing.
That's right.
And very quickly the feedback came in like, what's this bitch so mopey about? You know? And I think maybe that was a blessing because it certainly made me aware of how I was being perceived, which put me right back in high school.
Mm.
Like, you're totally aware of what everyone around you is saying, the rumor mill. It was humbling.
it's hard too, because we were young, and of course, I mean, gosh, as an adult, you want to be liked. As a kid, you want to be liked so badly, and you want to do a good job, and especially on our first jobs. And I remember that. I remember how uncomfortable it made me feel, because Brooke was put in a position where she, granted, performatively and to try to feel any kind of validation because she didn't have it from her family and, you know, all the aspects of her backstory, she was very sexualized. And then I felt like I was being very sexualized. Mm-hmm. And it made me so uncomfortable. This sort of like, yeah, this like, oh, you're a bad girl. And I was like, I play this girl on TV. And yeah. I don't know who I am yet.
I remember that too, Sophia, because didn't a lot of the press that we started doing after the show, it was like you were always expected to be wearing the super short skirt, the big, you know, the cleavage thing. Remember that photo shoot that we did that was like in a garbage dump or something? They like had.
What was that?
Joy hated that shoot.
Oh my God. Yes. No,
Joy was like, weird, we are not racetrack. Trash.
Yeah.
I still have something up in my craw about it. Like, I'm so mad.
Yeah. It was like we'd worked so hard to get here. We get our first big photo shoot, and they put us in a dump.
God, yeah.
Joy, I'm so glad you brought that
up.
Yeah,
like a salvage yard kind of a place.
But there was some that was like on a racetrack, and the racetrack was really cute, and that was fun stuff. And then they were like, come over here in short skirts and stand in front of a pile of trash. And I was like, no.
By the way, Hillary, do you remember we were side by side in one of those shots that day, and they handed you a hose and you just like pointed it at the ground? They wanted you to be hosing me down.
What?
And you wouldn't do it. And I just like froze, and you were like, no. And I remember just looking around like, is this what's expected of me? And we didn't obviously like we didn't let them keep the water on. But like that idea, essentially they were like trying to shoot a wet t-shirt contest. And I was like, I don't want to do this at all. At all. Especially in a pile of trash.
The trash.
What a gross day of work.
Oh my God.
I had totally forgotten about that. And I'm so glad you brought it up, because it is such a metaphor for how we were treated the whole time. Like, guys, we're going to give you a photo spread. It's going to be a cover. It's made of trash. Womp, womp. Joy, what was your first experience of like getting feedback? Because I feel like we started to get it right around this episode.
I don't know. I mean, I know that what I remember was that there were message boards. That was still like, there was still dial up, I think, at that time. I don't remember. But it was definitely like MySpace and message boards. And it was not fancy or slick or pretty or anything. So you'd just go find your show on a message board and then just like search your name or look for whatever people were, whatever the topics were. I don't remember. I could make something up, but I just don't remember.
No, that's good. That means it wasn't traumatic.
No, it wasn't. I was concerned with what people thought. I think it probably did inform things that I maybe fought for or didn't fight for, but I wish I had a memory of it. I don't, but you do. You remember seeing things that people didn't like. Did it affect you when you went to work the next week or the next day, or were you like trying to make different choices? How did it affect you?
I was certainly concerned about storyline, you know, because the show I signed up for was one thing. It evolved into this other thing that's like making vibrator jokes with teenage girls and like staying out drinking all night, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Even though the lights are all on. it definitely gave me like a lot of anxiety. Especially because our bosses were aware of it. Like, they brought it up to me. They're like, man, everybody hates you. We're not sure how to, like, circle back and get them to like you, but they really like the other girls a lot better. And so there was a part of me also that was like, well, maybe I lean into this. Like, you know, the first lesson they teach you in acting school is the bad guy doesn't know they're the bad guy, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So there certainly was a part of season one where I'm like, oh, I'm the bad guy. Like, I guess I didn't realize it when I auditioned for the show, but I'm the bad guy. And that made it a lot easier to do questionable things, you know, to just like lean into the surly.
That's so interesting that you felt like the bad guy.
That's like the beginning of it all, too. The beginning of the separation, the segregation of the three of us. Of like, you know, the idea that you're somehow unliked. Mm-hmm. And the rest and the other, you know, that somehow you're the odd man out.
And there was always something. There was always a little earworm they'd give us, right? Like, oh, well, you know, this was good, but you know what they really liked was when she did that. And you know who's really good is
that buckle on Sophia's shirt. The sponsors loved it.
It's like, you know, they wanted us to feel like if you know, anyone else was succeeding, we were failing, was how we were made to feel, rather than you guys are all doing a really good job. And like, here's what your strengths are. And we're really proud of you. That certainly was not.
Isn't it crazy how in direct, like opposite from the storyline of the show it is? Like you've got Deb and Karen and you've got Peyton and Haley, like all kumbaya. Like this is awesome. But then the behind the scenes, what was that show that E! True Hollywood Story, where they like ruin everything? Dun, dun, dun. The behind the scenes was so different. So it's crazy that the same brains were coordinating both.
But you know what's interesting to me is when I think about the fact that there was such huge conflict between Lucas and Nathan. And in so many high school shows, the conflict is between the girls. But the conflict with the kids was between the boys. So in a way, in the beginning, they wrote us very atypically. They kind of switched the traditional gender roles. And later, as the boys repaired their relationship, they created rifts with the girls. And later, they also started taking things from our real lives and putting them in the shows in very manipulative ways. Because, you know, there
I was just going to say, though, that's like a great point that they wrote us as like 90s boys.
Yeah.
What 90s boy would be your character?
Ooh, that's interesting.
Oh, gosh.
Sorry, I've been watching Friends.
Like, I'm thinking, like, who was the B. Arthur of 90s boys? I'm like, for myself.
Yeah.
Like, you mean you as a person or like as the
character?
Like, who would have been like, Haley, who was like the 90s boy of?
I think you're totally right, Sophia. They wrote you as like the Paul Walker. You know what I mean?
Oh my God, I was going to say, like, I was the Pacey. You think I'm the Paul Walker? That's so flattering.
From Varsity Blues, just like having sex on the washing machine. And I'm fun. I'm the star.
Yeah, like the party boy.
Yeah. For sure.
Wow. She kind of was the captain of the football team.
Yes. 100%. The alpha.
Okay. So who's the boy who loved?
Who's Haley?
Yeah.
Who's Haley?
I don't know. I didn't watch like 90210, but I feel like there's somebody in there.
I mean, there's strong Josh Jackson vibes, I think. Like super frank. I could live on a boat.
Yeah.
You know?
Like boy next door, but no BS.
Yeah.
Yeah. Childhood love.
I like that.
I still think
go for that. Go for some
that Haley and Lucas energy is just so latent and prime. It's
who's
prime.
Yours? Who's your 90s boy?
I don't know. What I'm afraid of is that I'm like,
were you Luke Perry? Were you Dylan?
I think
you were Dylan.
I think you were Dylan.
Guys, yes. I watched Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the movie, with my son. And I was oh, my God. I didn't want to be Buffy. I wanted to be Luke Perry. Like, that was my angst. Yeah.
That feels really appropriate because as a young teen myself, I didn't know if I wanted to be Luke Perry or date Luke Perry. And I feel like Brooke doesn't know if she wants to be Peyton or date her. So
because over the years, so many people have come up to us and talked about sexuality and being teenage girls. And while we were so worried about being painted as these like little sex puppets for men you know? What I didn't realize is how much energy people were picking up on, you know, for a whole rainbow of preferences. Yep. And seeing it in myself in this episode, you know, I kind of gasped when Peyton comes or is like hanging out with Haley outside of the bathroom because I was like, is Peyton flirting with Haley? It was like I'm watching a totally different person.
Yeah.
But I was also enamored with you, Joy. And so maybe, yeah, probably just like, yo, girl, you trying to get out of here?
It's high school. Yeah. It's hormones. We're all trying to figure out, like, who are we? And what do I do with all these hormones? And
how
you
do I feel about this? And I think the reality is that what you see on screen, I mean, my God, we were watching the episode and we were like, oh, the vibes are strong. The vibes are strong in the bathroom hallway. And I think the truth of the matter and you know, the reality, even when we think about all of our lives behind the scenes, as you said, it's messy because you are a young person trying to figure out what attraction means. You know, now as an adult, I'm like, oh, my God, I'm attracted to the brains and intellects and spirits of all of my friends. And of, you know, I have writing crushes on people. But when you're a teenager, you're just like, well, a crush is a crush is a crush. You don't know the difference between what makes you drawn to a person. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is about that era of figuring it out. And I think that's why, even though our show was very binary at the time and because of who it was written by, I think so many people, as you mentioned, with a, you know, spectrum of preferences felt represented by us anyway, because
into it what they wanted to see.
Yes, we were still representing that curiosity and that finding of ourselves regardless of where our characters found themselves.
Which, to your point, Sophia, that we at that age, you know, we are all trying to figure out where we fit and where we belong. And so much of how we figure that out is by what we watch and what we see around us. You know, the shows that we consume as young people make a huge impact on that, which again goes back to parenting, which is why parenting is so important. That, you know, it's not, you're not just getting all your information from TV, because God, I mean, my idea of romance and attraction and what I thought relationships should
what
be like
was
blah, blah,
it,
blah,
was
blah,
it
like,
Pride and Prejudice, Joy? What was what was your like dream romance as a teenager?
Oh my gosh. Well, The Princess Bride, of course.
Well, as you wish.
Could my expectations get any higher? Please.
You and me both.
Oh my. And, you know, any of those great rom-coms, My Best Friend's Wedding, which is super bittersweet and like not the kind of way that you want to model your, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's like you need, that's why parents are so important and why I'm so grateful that we had, you know, Keith doing some great parenting in this show, in this episode, for sure. I mean, let's talk about that. Karen also, you know, giving great advice, and Deb was trying, but Nathan didn't seem to really listen. But I loved that Keith was like, I'm not letting you kids just run riot and get away with anything.
Yep.
I'm going to make some phone calls and you guys have to own up to your responsibilities.
Yeah.
It's nice to see that.
Yeah, it was so nice to see the adults in the room force them to deal with the mess they'd made the night before.
And Keith, by the way, like, had we seen him interact with Nathan at any point yet?
No,
like, the first thing we see is him, like,
it's like trying not to kill each other, girls.
Yeah, he probably had, like, Christmas with this kid when he was little. They've had to sit with each other at Thanksgiving. And so for him to call and rat him out and be like, if your dad won't parent you, I will parent you.
Wow. Yeah.
It's a big step.
Yeah. And to not only demand that these kids learn something and behave, even if not in the moment, in the aftermath, with a modicum of respect. And then you see Deb, you know, when she gets into it with Dan, and Dan says, well, he's a good kid, you know, and she tells him what he did. And she says, a good kid based on what, his scoring average? And it's like, do you even know what's going on with your kid? Or are you just concerned with his performance?
You're so right, Sophia. Think about a lot of the other shows, or a lot of shows I see now with teenagers. And sorry if I sound like an old lady, but like they're so disrespectful.
Yeah.
They're so disrespectful. And you're right. There was at least a lot of the kids on our show, when they were speaking to an adult, that respect was still represented.
Mm-hmm. And if they were disrespectful, they got called on it.
Right.
Which I think is so important. And when we took it a step farther and said, you know, what's motivating them? What's hurting them? You know, Deb throwing that in Dan's face, she was like, you're paying attention to what he's doing, not how he is.
Yeah.
And that hits different for me now.
It makes me want to see more of Deb.
More of Deb.
More Deb?
More Deb, you say? How can we get more of Barbara Allen Woods?
Yeah. I think what's cool is that if this script came across our desks, like right now, I like the women that Deb and Karen are. Like, this would be something where I'd be like, that sounds neat. Okay, so it was not lost on us.
No.
We have crashed the comet how many times?
How many times, though?
Over the course of this show.
We actually need to know. Somebody has to find out.
Yeah, because we don't know. Because I forgot that Nathan crashed it. I know I crashed it once. Did Luke crash it at some point?
I feel like maybe. I feel like that poor car really got harmed often.
Well, there were two of them.
Yeah.
They kept two on the lot. We had Steve Thompson's, and that was our alpha car.
Yeah.
He worked in our camera department.
That was the one we never hurt.
Yeah, that was the one that drove.
He's like,
don't you scratch
and then
my car.
There was this other car that it was like the punching bag that we, you know, had to keep kind of looking like the Comet. But then I heard that the Comet got sold, and I would see people post about like, oh, I bought the Comet. And I'm like, which one?
Which one?
You're like, is it the one we crashed into a telephone pole? Because if so, I am sorry.
Sorry, guys. I will admit that sometimes I go on classic car websites and shop
to look for
that Comet.
You do. Yeah.
I should have bought it.
I think you deserve it.
Steve offered to sell it to me when I first left the show, but it was too new.
Too close.
What I mean? Like, I couldn't have it sit in my driveway.
No.
It was like, yeah. And now I'm like, that's my car. Give me my car back.
Damn.
I want it. One of these days.
Okay. So really what this is a call out. If anyone is listening and happens to be an excellent internet sleuth, and I know y'all are out there because you find things like pictures of Joy in a penis hat. You turn them up all the time. If somebody out there, I'm sorry, in a green hat, please don't Photoshop the thing I just said. It's not appropriate.
Don't do that, guys.
Don't do that.
I'm waiting for it.
Keep it classy.
The internet's a rough place.
Keep it classy, internet friends.
Please.
But in your classy searches of iconic One Tree Hill history, if someone finds a comet on the internet, please email us the link at our Drama Queen's email address. We would like to see it. And perhaps
am I going to be
place an anonymous bid?
Can I drop my son off at school in Peyton's comet?
Well,
hey guys.
A, playing the theme song.
B, I also sort of love the idea, you know, since this is our 2.0 adventure, like, why can't you paint it white? Or paint it red?
Like,
you
could Mary Kay Pink.
Sure.
Let's get real drama queen
like a
with
pink
it now.
Cadillac. You can do whatever you want. You can have your version of her car.
All right. DramaQueens@iHeartRadio.com. Someone's going to find me a comet.
Yeah. And we want to know how many times the comet was crashed.
Yes.
Yeah, tell us.
Two pieces of information we could use from you, our friends out there.
Word. Yeah. Who wants to do superlatives?
Let's do most likely two?
Most likely two.
Bring it
we
on.
We really need to get the sound of a drum roll for these moments because I
one of those
I
wheels
just
need like
it.
What do we got?
Woo!
Likely to get married in Vegas.
Interesting. Okay, so we should have a real life option and then a character option.
Okay.
What do we think?
I think the person who's most likely to get married in Vegas is definitely Tim.
Oh, sweet Tim. Aww, he would just take whatever he could get.
Sweet
what
baby.
Sweet... Yeah, Tim definitely. Yes.
Yeah.
Right?
Any cheerleader.
Just like, we're going to Vegas. I see it.
Yeah, I don't know that I disagree with that. I don't know that I can come up with a better one.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's great.
Okay, but who in real life? Like, who's the most impulsive member of our gang? I'm trying to think if anyone did get married in Vegas. Did
anyone?
I would.
You would, Joy.
You would?
Yeah. Oh, you would like elope with a pair of cowboy boots on under your dress and just like do it.
Yeah, I would do it.
Wait,
yeah.
Are we going to solicit for that on the internet too?
Everybody, who should Joy date? Yes.
Yes. Yeah, fine.
I love this.
Not the first wedding. You don't want your first wedding in Vegas, but if you're going to have a second one, go to Vegas.
Yeah.
Go to the courthouse or go to Vegas.
Aren't we going to Vegas soon, Joy?
Oh, that's right. Okay, so I have to find someone to marry. Someone who I want to marry within the next, like,
by the
give us your type.
Like, so yeah.
Design your type right now.
Oh, gee whiz. Oh, gee willikers, guys.
You're like, oh, well, okay,
we're gonna
if I
manifest it.
Oh, and my gosh.
We're going to blow on the dice.
Y'all, I just want like a nice, tall Christian cowboy. I want somebody who's like Cole Hauser on Yellowstone, but just plus some Jesus, you know, like that Johnny Cash kind of Jesus. I want somebody who's a little bit grouchy and rough, but also is a big teddy bear inside and
Alan Jackson jeans.
Smart. He's got to be real smart. Like, I got to have a really good conversations. So that it kills me if that's not. And I got to laugh. Got to make me laugh.
All right. Yeah. Giddy up, cowboy.
There you go.
We're coming to Vegas. You got shot.
I'll take an Irish lumberjack too. Anybody, you know, I don't want to like weed out the rest of the world.
Yeah, okay. So I can see that vibe.
What you're saying is you like rural. It doesn't matter.
Rugged
like
and
what
rural,
country.
Baby.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. I used to say when I was on the market, I used to say, this is hard, but I need someone who can go rugged to red carpet. Like, you got to run the ranch, and you have to be able to drop into a tux with me because we have things to go to.
And that's so funny.
If you say it enough.
When I date someone and they like don't quite know how to dress for a carpet, it's kind of sweet. I don't know.
Yeah.
Aww. It's cool. No, your sneakers look good, baby.
All it takes is two birthdays and a Christmas, and you can make over anyone.
Boom.
Oh, that's true. Right.
Two birthdays and a Christmas.
You're good at that. You're good at that. You're like, I'll fix you. Don't worry. No,
I'm like, just
worries.
Wear this. Okay, so we know that our angel, Brett Claywell's character, Tim, is probably going to go to Vegas, and that feels right to all of us. And then, you know, Joy, we'll see what happens in September.
Hey, I'll be there. You know, if you're like a nice Christian cowboy who's like tough and smart and, you know, grouchy, meet me in Vegas.
You know what I mean? Grouchy is
make sure your jeans are tight, sir. But
you're like,
until
if you're too pleasant, I don't believe you.
Yeah, exactly. You gotta be just a little cranky. But until we meet this grouchy, cranky cowboy, we do have some listener questions in the meantime. The first one comes in from our friend Jacob, who says, my two best friends, Courtney and Marissa, and I are going to Wilmington for our vacation to sightsee all the One Tree Hill sites.
Oh,
we've
cute.
Enjoyed making a list of things and are even using things from your podcast to add to it.
Hey,
cuties! Hey. Are there any hidden gems you guys would suggest?
Uh-huh. Well, Lee tipped everyone off to the Brasserie last week.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
What about that tea? Is the tea room on Water Street still there?
No, you guys, I think that's up for sale. That's that listing I sent you. So we have this secret dream of getting a shop together, like the three of us.
In Wilmington.
So I scour real estate listings and then send them to these two at 2 o'clock in the morning.
It's my favorite thing.
What about right next to it? There's a French place. I want to say it's like Le Cotillion.
Le Catalan.
Le Catalan, that's
Le
right.
Catalan. Yeah.
They've got a good, what's it with the hot dog wrapped in a croissant and they serve it with mustard?
Like a pig in a blanket?
Yeah, but it's French.
It has a fancy name.
Le pig en croissant.
Le cochon.
Oh my God, I love it. Those little spots downtown, I will say what I know will always be there that you must go to is Kilwin's ice cream, especially because it's going to be summer.
And you can smell it.
Ugh, you can smell the waffle cones cooking from outside. Literally, my mouth is watering thinking about it. Mm. Their chocolate chip cookie dough is the best ice cream I've ever had in my life. So,
oh my God. Their toasted coconut's off the chain, too. Ugh,
it's just so good. Please go have some for us. Go to the Brasserie for that mac and cheese that is Lee Norris's favorite. And you must go to Wrightsville Beach, A, because it's, again, the summertime, and B, because Tower 7 is there. And that those tacos.
Yeah. Ugh. And for shopping, go to the Edge of Urge.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Is that still there?
Yeah.
Oh, it's totally still there. And they've also got a location in Raleigh. I think we all know I'm going to talk about the bar scene.
Hey.
Blue Post is the spot. You know, we were friends with the owners when we were there. We're still friends with the owners. In fact, so over the Christmas break, Jeffrey had to shoot a movie. And they shot the entire movie without him, like in LA or somewhere else. And then they just had to shoot his coverage. They had like a body double for him. So they literally just needed to shoot his coverage. And we were in the Outer Banks. And they were like, we'll meet you in Wilmington. We need a bar, but everything's closed for COVID. So where can we shoot? And so I called Barbara Wheaton, the owner of Blue Post, and was like, yo, girl. My husband's got to do a movie. Can they shoot your bar? And she was like, oh my God, yes. So they opened it up for this, you know, this production. But it will only be Jeffrey's side.
Oh my God.
Right outside of Blue Post. So it was really cool. I think they had to double like sand dunes in the desert. And so they drove out to Carolina Beach in the middle of the night and cheated the beach for the desert, which is totally crazy.
So but that's cool.
That's the magic of movie making.
Magic.
So yeah.
Blue Post is great. And Yosaki, like karaoke at Yosaki was so fun.
So fun. And if you go to Blue Post, look for our little placards, because Blue Post has a beer list. You will not get through it in 3 days, our friend Jacob and Courtney and Marissa.
But it
took us all a while. I think it's like 64 beers or something. And some of them are disgusting on purpose. And you have to drink all of them. And then you get a little placard on the wall with your name on it.
Did you do it?
Of course I did it.
I never did that.
Oh, I did it. I was like, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I was like, give me all the beers. Let's do this. I want to leave my mark on Wilmington in this bar.
Your face is painted on the side of the studio, but you're like, I'm going to get that.
I'm going to get that little placard on that post. And I think they're honestly like little plastic name tags that just get hot glued to the wall.
Baby, someone stole yours. You know, really it's not still there.
I really hope not. I would be so sad. That felt important. I mean,
if you did steal it, give it back.
If you stole it, please return it. Thank you very
much.
Along
with my comment. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Whoever bought that should honestly sell it to you. That would be a nice thing for them to do.
Guys, they like shipped it across the ocean, which is a huge compliment. It's in Australia, I heard.
Really?
Oh, my gosh.
That's a huge compliment that someone wanted it so bad.
So I hear you saying is that we also need to take our road show of Drama Queens to Australia. And these people need to give us a ride to our event. Eventually in your car.
So if y'all could just get vaxxed so we could like come and hang out like globally, that would be great.
We would love it. Who's up next?
Okay, so we have a question from Katie. Katie says, if you were the parent to Brooke, Haley, and Peyton, and or Peyton, what advice would you have given them to help them get through high school? I mean, oh my God, are we going to talk for another 45 minutes?
Yeah.
My Lanta.
Should we just give advice for our characters, like as our respective, like parent to our characters?
Oh.
Yes, that makes sense.
That's sweet.
I would have told Haley, it's okay to make mistakes. Don't worry so much about being perfect and trying to control everything. Just let yourself be messy if you need to and just experiment and experience life.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I would tell Peyton, baby, you got the whole rest of your life to be a grown up. You know, don't rush it. Just be goofy. Mm-hmm. I see myself trying to be goofy in Peyton, but she wasn't written as goofy. And so I see myself like slumping or like delivering lines kind of goofy. I like when I see kids just acting like dorks. I'd tell Peyton to dork it up.
Yeah. Oh, I would want to give that that advice to Brooke also. And actually, Joy, it's so funny what comes to mind. I don't know if you remember this, but remember when we were in Wilmington and you started asking us to do those 20 questions, answers for you?
Oh, yeah, my blog.
And you asked me to write advice to my younger self. And it feels so right for Brooke, especially as we've just unpacked some of her performative fear in this episode. But I remember saying, don't worry so much about being someone else's definition of enough. You already are. Yeah. And I just would want for her to feel that she was enough, that she didn't have to prove or live up to or convince anyone of anything.
I love that.
Little so lady.
You're enough.
Little I lady. Think guys,
you guys are totally enough. You're more than enough for me.
You are. Ditto. We hope you're having fun with us. We hope you're learning some things and, you know, it's sparking conversations between you and your friends as well. And we're just so grateful that you're tuning in. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Drama Queens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Next week we have episode 5, All That You Can't Leave Behind. I have no idea what's going to happen. I'm on the edge of my seat.
I mean, Lucas is mad at Haley, and Peyton and Nathan are on the verge of breaking up. Ooh. And something's going on with Brooke in this next episode, I think, too.
Oh, my.
We'll have to.
Are you finally going to make a move? Are you going to make a move on the boy?
I don't know. Guys, I don't remember.
Well, we're going to find out real soon. We love you guys. Thank you.
Love you all.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening.
Don't forget to leave us a review. You can also follow us on Instagram at DramaQueensOTH.
Or email us at DramaQueens@iHeartRadio.com.
See you next time.
We're all about that high school drama girl, all about them high school queens. We'll take you for a ride in our comic girl,
drama girl,
cheering for the right team.
Drama queens, drama queens,
smart girl, rough girl, fashion, but you're tough girl. You could sit with us, girl.
Drama queens, drama queens, drama queens, drama, drama queens, drama queens.